Welcome to the Yokoji Zen Mountain Center podcast. Every month we share at least one new talk on the practice of Zen Buddhism at cmc.org/podcast. You can also find us on iTunes, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. If you find these talks to be valuable, please consider supporting Yokoji by donating at cmc.org/donate. We rely on your support to continue sharing this life-changing practice. Thank you. We hope you enjoy the talk.
Good morning. Yeah, I hope you're all doing good. Today, I'm going to talk about points arising out of Think Good Nor Evil, Case 23 from the Mumenkan, or the Gateless Gate. Sunlight by Yamada Roshi, for those of you that have a book or like it. So the case involves the sixth ancestor who most Zen lineages trace their direct descent from. The case: the sixth ancestor was once pursued by the monk Myo as far as Mount Dayu. The ancestor, seeing Myo coming, laid the robe and bowl on a rock and said, "This is the robe of faith. How can it be competed for by force? I will allow you to take it away." Myo tried to lift it up, but it was immovable as a mountain. Terrified and trembling with awe, he said, "I came for the Dharma, not the robe. I beg you, lay brother, please reveal it to me." The ancestor said, "At the very moment you were chasing after me, without thinking good or evil, what was the original face of Monk Myo?" In that instant, Myo suddenly attained deep realization, and his whole body was covered with sweat. In tears, he bowed and said, "Besides the secret words and secret meaning you have just revealed to me, is there anything else deeper yet?" The ancestor said, "What I have now preached to you is no secret at all. If you reflect on your own true face, the secret will be found within yourself." Myo said, "Though I have been at Obai with the other monks, I have never realized what my true self is. Now, thanks to your instruction, I know it is like a person who drinks water and knows for himself whether it is cold or warm. Now you, lay brother, are my master." The ancestor said, "If that's the way you feel, let us both have Obai for our master. Be mindful and hold fast to what you've realized." Muon's commentary: it should be said of the sixth ancestor that his action sprang from urgent circumstances. His kindness is like that of a grandmother who peels fresh lychee, removes the seed, and puts it in your mouth so that all you have to do is swallow it. The verse: it can't be described, it can't be pictured, it can't be sufficiently praised. Stop trying to grasp it with your head. There is nowhere to hide the primal face. Even when the world is destroyed, it is indestructible. So this is like an archetypal koan, and there's many points in it, especially just arising from our own lives. What we try and realize on many levels is ungraspable. It's hard to find, but through practice, then it becomes apparent, and then it can be embodied. The sixth ancestor was quite a character, and again, he was like, somebody that had you know, worked very hard during his life. He was fairly young in this place, somewhere between about 18 and 22. And he had to, he couldn't really afford to take time off work. He was a woodcutter. He'd been, basically his father had died. He was a local official. And so he lived in a subsistence type of lifestyle, looking after his mother. And he heard about Buddhism. Once when he was walking past one of his customers' houses, and then he heard the words "dwelling nowhere" raise the mind, which come from the Diamond Sutra. He asked the person about this, where this phrase had come from, and he said, you know, it was from the Diamond Sutra, and he'd heard it from a master called Hungjen, a Zen master. And so the sixth ancestor at that point had some realization, decided it was time to go to the monastery to find out a good teacher, because this was really satisfying an inner quest that he had in himself. So, you know, he manages to get his mother some support, because he can't just leave her. He's basically the one that's giving her the money to get by and the food, etc. So some of his neighbors, who were apparently devout Buddhists, and his mom being a devout Buddhist, they decided that it was a great thing for him to do. So they decided to take care of her, and he goes off to see Hungjen. And so Hungjen, or actually, I just stay with Hungjen, I can't remember his Japanese name. So he goes to see him, and Hungjen greets him, and they have a little conversation. Hungjen decides to do a kind of conversation with an uppity young man that comes into the monastery, and says, you know, he's like you Southerners, you know, and he could have been from Vietnam. They say that he's from a province in China, but sort of historically geographically, he probably came from North Vietnam. He goes, "Don't you know that you barbarians down there don't have Buddha nature? How could you?" You know, and the sixth ancestor says, "Well, you know, in the Buddha Dharma, there really is no north or south, so how can that kind of criteria reach it, you know? For each one of us, you know, we probably have our own regional or state prejudices about others, and we may be put in certain prejudicial positions. And it's always important to know, it doesn't matter where you're from, you know, that that nature is always perfect as it is, as your life on a momentary basis." So, seeing that Daiken Enno or the sixth ancestor to be, then gets sent to the rice shed to work on rice, you know, just basically winnowing rice, taking all of the impurities out of it, etc. And he's there for about 8 months. And apparently he doesn't do an awful lot except do this rice, and he's a lay person. The monks tend to have a bit of an easier life than the monks in the monastery at that time. And, you know, this training sort of goes on, and he really allows himself to be immersed in this training. He doesn't take it as anything, you know, anything more difficult than the woodcutting that he was doing before. And at the same time, he's got a lot of support from the community in itself. And then we hear that, as the story goes, and if I got the name wrong last time, it's Shinshu is the head monk that was there at that time. So Hungjen, the fifth ancestor, is looking for a successor. And so he asks the monks to post their poems on a bulletin board in the corridor. And Jinshu then says, the body is the Bodhi tree. The Bodhi tree. The mind is like the stand of a clear mirror. Wipe it clean from time to time and never let the dust alight. I changed the translation a bit there because it's not poetic at all. But it has the same, they say rubbish in it. And rubbish doesn't rhyme with an awful lot of stuff in this poem. Okay, so he puts it up there, and the sixth ancestor, who can't even read, he's illiterate. So he's a barbarian and he's illiterate. So that's two things he's got against him. And the third thing is young. You know, youth usually doesn't get much of appreciation. So he goes and he asks another monk, he goes, can you read this for me? And what is it about? And he said, well, you know, the fifth ancestor is looking for someone to take over from him. And this is what the head monk has written. So he reads it to the sixth ancestor, and the sixth ancestor, and you can imagine, you know, young, has some realization, doesn't like what he sees. So he says, well, can you write this down for me? You know? So the monk writes it down for him. He goes, the Bodhi tree is intrinsically no tree. Kind of true. Nor has the clear mirror any stand. True. There is not one thing from the beginning. Very true. And then where can the dust alight? Yeah, it's true also. But again, with this is that there's two interpretations or experiences here. There's one, which is, yeah, you practice, you realize. And the other one is right from the beginning, the world has always been like this. We're confronted with this in Zen training right from the start. You know, one day when I was studying with Maizumi Roshi, he'd be talking about practice, you know, and practice really hard, really tough, die on the cushion, all that kind of stuff. And then another day is like, you know, what else are you going to be? Show me your false self. You know, so these things are put in front of us until we realize that, there's practice, there's realization, and they're both in this moment in time. So the story goes on, you know, so the fifth ancestor then sees the potential in Daiken Enno, and despite him being a layperson, young, and from a barbarian part of the world, he still sees the tremendous wisdom that he has. That's something for us always to remember, is that, you know, realization doesn't just appear in certain races, colors, sexes, shapes. It is apparent in front of us on a momentary basis, and people can really embody it. You know, so it's always important to keep your eyes and ears open for the truth that's said from anywhere at any given time. So then he decides to present a robe and a bowl, which is a symbol of transmission all the way from the Buddha down, to the future sixth ancestor, but he gets no witnesses with him. He just invites him round at midnight, as they say, and then he passes him this robe and bowl because he knows that the rest of the monks are going to be really upset. You know, he's not an aristocrat. He's from a bad part of town, and he's young. You know, so he really has to do this when there's none of these people there, because they're going to get upset and they're going to start, you know, talking about it, etc. How does he deserve it? You see it in the center right now. You know, he doesn't do, etc. You know, it's doubtful he was even allowed in the Dharma hall. You know, well, maybe the talks, but not the Zendo. Sixth ancestor goes there and he gets the robe, and fifth ancestor says, Hung Jen says, you know, people are going to be upset. You better leave and get out of here as fast as you can. So anyway, just to step back a little bit, is that the Dharma transmission ceremony is based on that interaction. So usually it's done at 12 at night. But most people stay up for it and do, you know, go to the ceremony. Some go to the ceremony, etc. Anyway, so he leaves. And then the koan starts, basically. So he does pretty well. He gets, you know, gets a good head start. And in the morning, the monks find that the fifth ancestor has given the robe and bowl away. And more than likely, he's told them. You know, he's not kept his secret. Somebody asks him, well, where's your bowl? You know, I don't have it. You know, where's your robe? You know, I don't have it. I gave it to so-and-so, and he's left. But then Monk Myo, he's an interesting character in that he is a general, or he was a general. And so he knows something about tracking and following and maneuvering and all that kind of thing. So he really wants to find out. And I don't think it's just about, you know, find out where the bowl is and bring it back, or the robe. You know, and this isn't that clear in the koan. You know, he goes, well, you know, if old Obai is gonna, or Hung Jen is gonna stop teaching, then, you know, I want to see who this person is that's there, that actually is now in possession of this. You know, just as it said, you know, says in the Buddha's transmission with Mahakasyapa, you know, now you have the treasury of the true Dharma eye, the marvelous mind of Nirvana or peace. Now I entrust it to you. So he's in that position. So he eventually tracks him down. And you can imagine the sixth ancestor faced with this old, probably gnarly general, is pretty confident. You know, he goes, "Okay, here it is. You can take it. You can take it." Now this is very interesting, because I mean, don't just think that this happens 1300 years ago. I mean, nowadays as teachers die, they pass on the tradition. I remember when Maizumi Roshi died, and I was the administrator of Zen Center of Los Angeles at the time, and the basically the Godo, or the next teacher that would take over. And people would come up to me and say, you know, Maizumi Roshi had said that I could be a teacher. You know, they would. They say that, and he goes, you know, I want one of these raksus that he's got in there. And basically we had a garden, you know, because people would get into his stuff, and so we had to lock up the rows. I mean, Steph's looking at me incredulously here, you know. He said, yeah, these things happen. And things disappeared in that process. But for those of us that they were at the center, you know, we just preserved those for Tetsugen, because he was the first successor. It was just out of the question. You know, it's not about the robes. It's not about his belongings. And, you know, just in the same way, it's not about relics or anything like that. It's, are you really at home in yourself? You know, in the later question, do you know your original face? You know, so this is a very basic koan in that way. And the sixth ancestor being who he is, it's not about having that robe and bowl. You know, he's not going to have a tug of war with Myo about it. You know, maybe tear it, maybe break the bowl or whatever like that. You know, he's just like, no, you take it. That's fine. You know, I'm okay as I am. And that's what the transmission is about. If you're really okay with yourself, it's not about those things that you get. You know, it's like I often say, is that the titles and the accoutrements that I've got, that I've, say, earned or whatever, they don't really do anything for me. But that which, you know, sees through these eyes, hears through these ears, and doesn't need robes or bowls, is always awake and apparent. You know, I don't take that as an achievement, you know, but as something that has been here right from the beginning since, you know, year one or year zero. So, anyway, the sixth ancestor is there and he hands it over. And it's interesting, it says that it was impossible or he just couldn't pick up the robe and the bowl. And this wasn't because it's heavy, and more than likely this general was a pretty tough character. He probably could pick up stuff heavier than robes and bowls, you know, rocks and swords and spears and all that kind of stuff. So he goes, Mio tried to lift it, but it was as immovable as a mountain. And again, why is that so? This is a very important point. Is if I feel I don't deserve something, I won't pick it up. That's for somebody else. You know, nowadays people are pretending to be this and they're pretending to be that, and they wear the robes of, or you know, they wear the rewards of, and it's unfortunate, you know, because the actual embodying of those things and the things that they represent is not there. You know, you see people dressing up as soldiers, like they've been to a certain place, but they haven't earned those things. And so, you know, there's hypocrisy there. The general being genuine, you know, he's probably earned his way into that position. First in the Chinese army, and then having done that, then as a monk and doing everything that he could to put his own mind at rest. You know, so then in that truth, the very beautiful question that then he brings up is, you know, I didn't come here for this. You know, I really came here for the teaching. And so that's where the permission then to give some teaching comes forth. And again, just go back. One, he's a barbarian. That general probably was fighting barbarians. Two, he's young. And in Chinese society, that's not the most, the best place to be in. And three, he's a layperson. And yet, Mio has the, you know, the presence of mind and the humility to actually ask questions of somebody that was possibly empowered by his teacher. And then, of course, then the sixth ancestor, Daiken Enno, doesn't disappoint, you know. He goes, okay, now, thinking good nor evil, you know, don't think about good or evil. What is the original face of Monk Mio? And again, each one of us has got to take that on. It's not like, well, you know, if I was in his position then, it's no, now, what is your original face? If you can answer that, then your quest is basically done. If you can't, then that's exactly what you got to work on. What is this original face? The ground of being, the essential question of the Zen school. So, and that's nice, you know, I mean, the good thing is that Mio could answer it. It dawned on him at that point in time. It's not about all of those externals, those things that go on. It's about how do I really experience this now? And then it was obvious, really sunk into him. And those points of sinking in as human beings, where it is obvious, are, you know, some of the most wonderful times in our lives. As the conversation goes on, you know, him being a good student, you know, goes, well, you know, is there anything else now that I could learn? So having that realization, but that also shows that there's something missing in terms of his own training. And so he has to go on. And then the sixth ancestor again tells him the truth. And, you know, coming from a very basic woodcutter's kind of lifestyle, which probably doesn't have an awful lot of intellectual introspection or intellectual looking at the world, you know, he just goes, there's no secret here, you know, there's no secret. You know, when I was doing rice, that's what it was. When I was doing woodcutting, that's what it was. You know, now we're walking, this is what it is. It's not a secret. There's nothing hidden. There's nothing revealed in this. You know, what do you do with a person? What do you do with a person like that? You know, he's lived. The monk Myo's lived too. But there is obviously the aspects that we have as human beings where we get lost in the old teachings. We get lost in what these people have talked about. We long for the times, you know, when this realization comes forth. But the sixth ancestor just doesn't entertain that at all. And of course, you got to remember at this point in his life, the sixth ancestor, one, he's on the run; two, he's young, and according to the fifth ancestor, you know, he says, "Don't teach for 10 years because people won't take you seriously." Now, for any of you who are young, you may recognize this. You know, it's like, you know, I'd finished koan study in my early 30s, and my Zumi Roshi would take me places, you know. And for the Japanese, and I'm pretty sure for the Chinese too, it's like when you're young is that you're not maybe taken seriously as could be, you know. So he would take me to something like an architect's place, and because I was doing a lot of the building, and he goes, Tenshin looks really young, but he's really 40. And I think that was like a magic number, you know, where you get some respect, you know, people would listen to you, you know. And I, you know, I mean, I'm taking it seriously in the sense that I've got a job to do, etc. But, you know, he's like, you don't have to do that. You know, you don't have to do that for me. He'll respect me in time. There's no problem there, you know, when he sees what I can do, you know. But anyway, you know, that's views. We have views about where wisdom can come from, etc. Okay, what I've now preached to you is no secret at all. Reflect on your own true nature. That's Sazen. Reflect on your true nature. And the secret, and again, secret's kind of interesting because it's intimate on a momentary basis. It doesn't mean it's something that will be a key to unlocking your life. It's here, it's intimate. As your life on a momentary basis, you practice this, and at some point it becomes clear. Why? Because you're not practicing that, futurizing, or going back in nostalgia. When it was that way, then it was like that. Now, of course, people like the sixth ancestor to come, again, just lived a very simple life. There wasn't an awful lot that got in his way in that way. Life was always like this. And you run into people like that. Some people have more complex lives, but they have that kind of mindset. No, life is like this. You know, why are you worrying about that other stuff? Okay, now, though I have been with the fifth ancestor, with the other monks, I have never realized what my true self is. Now, thanks to your instruction, I know it's like a person who drinks water and knows for herself whether it is cold or warm. Now, you lay brother are my master, my teacher. But it is kind of interesting is that he uses this example is that definitely when you drink water, like, you know, I drink that, it's cold. You know, not ice cold, it's tap cold. And I know it. You know, is somebody going to say, no, it's not? You know, it's whiskey. No, that's not whiskey. It's water. period. Now, in terms of, you know, Buddhahood or the practice of thusness or immediacy, as my Dharma sister Jikyo sometimes talks about, you can't take that away. You know it for yourself. Here it is. No problem. So, yeah, I mean, he's just saying, this is it. Don't worry about it. Let whatever unfolds, unfold. You don't need to worry about what you're going to attain later. And then the other part, again, is he goes, well, now you are my master. Get out of it. You know, now you know, I'm not going to accept you as a student, you know, unless you study or find out, you know, that's too hard work having a student, you know, but the sixth ancestor also at this point, he knows the beauty of the teaching and that sacred aspect of teacher and student. He goes, no, look, I haven't put the work into this. You know, I haven't put the work into this. We just met. I said some words. The person that's been doing all of your training is Obi, the fifth ancestor. And, you know, he's not like a lot of modern teachers trying to recruit students. You know, it's just like, no, leave me with the freedom until that part of my life really comes in. He goes, no, let us both be the students of Obi. He really appreciates his teacher, the person that brought him to this point and trained him. You know, he doesn't need to then start to, you know, gather his own following at that point. And apparently what he did was he waited 10 years, just like Obi said. You know, I mean, he's not stupid. I remember Genpo Roshi, you know, saying, you know, don't be in a rush to be a teacher. And then later on, when I was getting closer to be a teacher, he was going, no, do not teach. He goes, Tenshin, don't teach. And then he even told my mom that. He goes, don't let him teach, you know, in that way. I mean, for one is that, I mean, I'm putting a lot of, you know, emphasis on that right now. The most important thing is to practice. And for me, is first, I'm a practitioner. Not of this thing called Zen, but of living in itself. I am a student of life on a momentary basis. Mastery is that process. And I'm not saying I am a master. Mastery is that process. And that is the important thing in terms of that. That's endless. It continues endlessly. There's never a place where this teaching doesn't occur, where something, not necessarily in a directed way, is to be learned. And then that experience of being present to, it sometimes gels into ways that can be very creative and help people in various ways, and myself in that process. So, you know, I mean, there's a lot in this story, and that's the beauty of stories, is that it reminds us of aspects of our own lives. It can become epic in some certain ways, but in that epicness, don't distance it from your own process, because you're in that. Your life is in that that same vein as the Buddhas, as the sixth ancestor, etc. And obviously we resonate with certain people because, you know, for various reasons. Okay, where are we going? And then he says the beautiful part at the end, be mindful and hold fast to what you've realized. And that's important, you know, if you realize something, invest it in your life, practice it. Until it's embodied, and then you don't need to worry about it. If it's real, it manifests in your life. If it isn't, carry on. Just keep on going. Mumon, in his commentary here, he says his kindness is that like that of a grandmother who peels a fresh lychee, removes the seed and puts it in your mouth. So you don't have, all you have to do is swallow. And literally, that's what the sixth ancestor has done. It's really no secret, he tells him. it's really no secret. It's intimate. You know, it's, you know, there he is. He's putting his mouth. All you have to do is swallow that fact and don't look for something else. While you're eating the lychee, don't think of the banana that's coming. You know, really enjoy that lychee that has been specially done for you. Just like my Zimiroshi would do that. You know, over and over. Just so you can swallow it. Yeah, okay. Time for questions and answers. Or something of that ilk.
You can now unmute yourselves. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to ask a question. And you can, I've opened up chat as well. Go ahead, Pierre.
Oh, good morning, Roshi.
Morning.
This is Pierre. I was wondering about these two main characters. I heard that they started their own schools as the northern and southern gradual and sudden schools. Were these the two characters that was...
Yeah, yeah. Jinshu and Daiken Enno. Yeah.
And in your opinion, are they just the same as gradual and sudden, or... Our school is all about sudden.
When I look at my life, it's been gradual, but my experience of this moment is always sudden.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. You know, both are important. You know, I mean, I don't need to take sides on that. You know, and the same thing is like when there is deep realization, it is usually come from a lot of practice. And to create schools like this is better than that, to me, is just, you know, it's like dividing a cow. It dies.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Roshi.
Thank you.
Thanks, Pierre.
Wow, nobody's speaking. Yeah. Hey, come on, I spoke for 35 minutes, so, you know.
Liam,
you know,
go ahead.
Hey, Liam.
Hi, Roshi.
Hey.
Good to see you.
You too.
Yeah, just that the realization that it's no secret.
Yeah.
Is that... Look, you know, I kind of relate it back to my upbringing with that journey. Kind of where you come from, I suppose, is a big part of who you are. But my influences were Christianity.
Yeah, and mine too.
Again, I can relate that story to, unless you be like little children, you cannot enter the kingdom of heaven.
Yeah.
So you're going back to, is that what that story is about as well? Like you're going back to who you were at the very beginning.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah. I mean, you know, you could say you come from God, you go back to God in that way. And in the meantime, is, you know, we tend to forget God, but he's always here as the one who sees through these eyes.
And we are connected. I've been fortunate to be reminded that having children, you've had children, when you come across that beautiful being, there's just a beingness there.
Yeah.
And it reminded me of being a being rather than thinking about being, or trying to interpret. So I'm walking around this, you know, huge, big interpretive brain.
Yeah.
Looking at, and I get lost in the brain.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Just thinking about everything.
Yes.
But I've forgotten.
Yeah.
The beginning.
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that. I would agree with that, yeah.
It's more like the kind of amnesia. So that story is just like, there's no secret. It's we are who we are. We're completely connected.
Yeah.
But we're lost in interpretations of what the connection is. Yeah. All the other millions of connections.
Yeah. And, the, you know, again, Yeah, and again, that's the process of Zen, is a shift from a thought-based process to an experience-based process. Simple as that, when you get down to it.
I do a little bit of Zooming to the Plato group on a Saturday.
Yeah.
So my weekend of bookend by 2,500 years ago, Socrates was around.
Yeah.
Buddha was around. And now, I'm around. But it's like zooming into both of those. But it's amazing, the Plato way is kind of, Socrates way is more like really teaching how to think.
Yeah.
In some ways, right? So it's kind of like really going out into the world, mm-hmm. and not so much going away from, but like really understanding kind of where you come from by thinking about it. Whereas the Buddha way is more to forget about all that, just go back, right mm-hmm. back.
Now, remember with this is that, the Platonic method, right? Yeah, not Platonic friends, but was to actually, you raise something up in your mind with thought, right? And then is this true? So you examine it, and then you keep on taking that back until you reach the basis.
Reason being the
and in Zen it's similar in that don't take these things for granted. You use thought as a cutting tool to go through any blocking kinds of constructs that we produce for ourselves until the basic experience is realized. That's the Zen method in many ways. If you have that sort of high intellect. So part of it is at first is put thought on one side, and then if thought does arise, use it as a tool to cut through. So that then, later on in practice, thought is not an enemy or anything like that. It's just it's one of six senses that can be used in very constructive ways rather than being used as an entertainment device, that can create heavens and hells rather than cut through things,
Yeah, but the amazing thing is, I've kind of realized that Socrates and Buddha were totally coming from the same place.
No, one was from Greece and one was from...
okay.
From, the Himalayas.
So coming from the one, you know.
Yeah. Got it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Liam.
Thank you. Oh, here we go. Rich.
Rich. Go ahead, Rich.
I had to unmute there. I had to figure that out. hi, Roshi.
Just want to ask you a quick... You're the big R right now. I don't see you.
Oh, yeah. Well,
you're in your PJs.
Let me get that too. 1 second.
Yeah, good.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. That's good. That good work. Seeing you. Yeah.
Hi, Roshi. I just have a question about what would it be... He asks an interesting question. Think neither good nor evil at this moment. Where is Monk Myo? And I was just wondering if you could talk about that a bit more. For me, it's most
important. Yeah, song. Yeah. I mean, yeah. Thanks. I didn't really go into it in much detail. But the main thing is that for me is the things that cloud my direct perception is when I start to go, this is a good thing or a bad thing, rather than going, what is this? So cut through those things and come directly to what's going on. Then I'm kind of left with nothing to hold on to. And then what's here is it becomes apparent. This is that original face. And it's kind of funny is that once I had this, pretty intense student come over and I did this talk and I asked the question to the audience and he answered it straight off the bat. And so I let him work on it for another 6 months, until it was obvious, to him in that way. But again, is that usually we try and place things you know, this original face, what kind of face is he talking about? You know, is it the North face? You know, is it this face? Is it the face of the Buddha? And until that's really felt and understood, you know, which is far more important. And obviously Myo was in such a place in terms of his own practice that he felt that in his own being. And then a change occurred in him. It wasn't just like he was answering a koan. It was so obvious for him. That's why he said what he said later. Excuse me.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Was that it? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I just have a question. That was it. Thank you.
All right, thanks. Good. Got two more. Galen's, I think, next.
Yep.
Galen. Thanks, Rich.
Yeah, hi.
Hi. Hey, Galen.
I just wanted to say that from the beginning of my practice in Zen, I've always really been drawn to this story, really liked this story. And I always had thought of the general not being able to pick up the robe and the bow as being like an Excalibur thing, you know, the mm-hmm. sword and the stone, or Thor's hammer, nobody could pick it, you know. And I figured it was one of those the Chinese propensity to have flowers in the air and gods all around and all that. But
yeah, that was more the Indians. The Chinese weren't necessary. Indians, yeah.
But I really appreciated the way you broke that down about mm-hmm. about teaching today.
Yeah,
and made it very real. For me. So that's all I wanted to say.
There's another part to that too. I mean, he might have been smart. He knew what that represented, and he didn't want it.
Yeah. All right.
He was lazy, you know. He'd been a general. He'd done that stuff. Yeah. Thanks.
Thanks, Galen. Terry and Penny.
Yeah. You're on.
Morning.
Morning.
Good to see you. Thank you.
You too.
I just had a comment that ties into what you just said, as it turns out, regarding not being able to pick up the robe and the bow. In teaching karate, I had a number of experiences where a student needed a certain teaching, and that teaching was, you know, they really wanted to be a black belt. Mm-hmm. So, but they were kind of focusing more on that than the practice.
Yeah.
So I just take off my belt, my black belt, and hand it to them and say, hey, go ahead, put it on. I don't care.
Yeah.
and they won't. And then it dawns on them, they don't do it because they know it doesn't make them a black belt.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It kind of obviously gets the point across to them. So again, like, they can't pick it up.
They
understand. So that's all I wanted to comment on. So,
thanks for that. I appreciate it. And wasn't it in the old days that it was a black belt simply because it had got dirty and old in that way?
They just wore white sat. The longer they trained it, they never washed it because it would wash the spirit and the training out of it. So
yeah, it's like the bell in Dokusan. You never clean that, although occasionally somebody will get hold of it and, you know, they wanna make it all shiny, you know.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
I guess it's Omar. Is it next, Omar?
Hi, everyone. Hi, Roshi.
Hey, hi, Omar.
So I have maybe just like a few things to say. The first thing I wanted to comment on, and to see if I'm reading too far into this, is that maybe Monk Nyo, when he found himself in this position of chasing after the sixth ancestor, very much in this role of, I am not a hunter, but I am a tracker.
Yeah.
I am kind of tied to this past life, tied to this past form of being.
Yeah.
and finding himself before this young lay person in almost a challenging sort of way, and seeing that this young person has no desire whatsoever to hold on to this, that there's no fight there. That maybe he saw when he was asked, you know, can you see your true face, that maybe he saw, and I don't know really anything about what I'm about to try to say, but that maybe he saw a little bit of this kind of dual reality, right, of being at first someone who's actually very committed to learning and someone who's very committed to what in my mind would be a very humble path. And at the same time, being someone who's very tied to a past that allows him or motivates him to go running after somebody in this almost kind of a vindictive way. And that maybe it might have dawned on him at that moment that really he's a little bit of both of that. And that, not that it's shameful to be both of that, but that it's humbling to know that you're somewhere in the middle of that, that you're a little bit of this and you're a little bit of that, and that in a moment where you're kind of confronted with yourself, you're kind of both and also neither. So that maybe that you already let go of that, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know if I'm really into it.
No. I mean, the thing that that I appreciate here is that I think what he saw in the sixth ancestor was sincerity. You know, I mean, it's just pure sincerity in that way. You know, he'd just come. Simply because he really wanted to awaken, and that was the main thing. It didn't matter about the other stuff. And I'm pretty sure that that general saw that, because he would have seen that through life. Is that it's like for myself, if I see someone that's sincere, it doesn't matter where they are in practice, because that sincerity is going to cut through anything that they do. You know, it's like we've you know, like at one point in my own practice, Maizumi Roshi asked me to he said, just talk with the new monks. And he said, he sort of prefaced it by saying, I haven't had much luck with them, you know, so maybe you can reach them. And so, you know, I asked him, you know, I said, well, what, you know, so we're on the same page. What is a monk for to you? So I asked him a very simple question, and he's, you know, he said, well, serve the people, accomplish the way. That's what it is to be a monk, and that can be a lay person too, it doesn't matter. So then when I talk with people, that's what I would bring up, you know, is that Maizumi Roshi says this, and I think it's true. You can do that as a lay person, but even with being very direct with people, there were still people that just wanted the robes as for recognition. And then one of them even left the Zen school and went into a different school so he could get brocade robes, you know. And for me, that's kind of like incredulous, you know, but that's human being. But that sincerity, the sincerity, anyone that... you know, they carry out their, basically their inner work, and they put it on the outside too. And then they help other people with that. That is so powerful. You know, nowadays we don't look at that, you know, sometimes I look with cynicism on it, but when I see somebody in front of me with that kind of sincerity, it melts my heart. You know, I can't give them bullshit. Unless it's humor.
There's a level of simplicity in that I think is really admirable, and that I think is very much what I'm trying to learn about Zen in terms of this concept of the ordinary mind or the beginner's mind, is just to kind of slow down, cut out a lot of the excess of kind of, like I said the last time we met, a lot of these dopamine stimuli, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of focus on, you know, if you're drinking your tea, drink your tea. If you're doing enjoy it. Do that.
Enjoy it. Yeah, that's the important thing.
And in that same vein, I had an experience once that for me, like, hasn't stopped being extremely significant for me, which was a teaching I got from a lay person, in a moment of stress. I used to be an administrator a program coordinator at Vanderbilt University.
Yeah.
And I would have to show up to my job dressed in, you know, a suit. And I was two places under the Vice Chancellor for Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion, which was topic at the time. And I was running late for work. I was about to miss the bus, and I sprinted for the bus.
Yeah.
And when I got to the bus, I think I got in there, and I said something like, I don't know, something like, God damn, you know? And then everybody sort of looked at me. I was like, man, I thought I was going to miss the bus. I appreciate it, you know? And I'm all, and my the bus driver said to me, oh, you don't have to use that language. I said, oh, I'm sorry about that. I'm just having a rough day. And he looked at me and he says, well, it starts in the mind.
Yeah.
And when he said that to me, I was just, wow.
Yeah,
it does. It does start in the mind. It has never left my mind, this concept of like, this teaching that I got from the bus driver, nameless bus driver, you know, it starts in my mind, and I can't step away from that, you know. I can't really, I mean, I know that there's potential to complicate that and go into what some people might say are higher philosophies or whatever, you know, but I don't really know that I need to, you know. I think that there's something very, very primordial in those words. It starts in the mind, you know.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No, and and my last question, and I'm sorry for being so long-winded here. If you can give me like a recommendation for a book where I could start to read this week. And lastly, if you could also maybe tell us a little bit more, or tell me, I'm sure everybody here is probably far more familiar with the lineage of the Zen Mountain Center and of Yokoji. But I would love to know more about the lineage and actually take some notes so that I can study a little bit.
Yeah. Let's see. I mean, the main thing is like, I did a book which is a primer, and it's The Way of Zen.
Gotcha.
And then there's a bibliography that'll lead you to other books. So it's a good primer there.
Great.
Yeah.
I'll start there.
And then, you know, some of the stuff on the lineage is in there, possibly the lineage itself. And there's some stories from India and China about in there too, and how Zen came to the West from mainly Japan in this case. Yeah.
Okay, great. I'll look for the book.
Thank you.
Thanks, Omar.
And Bruce.
Yep, Bruce.
Bruce, you're on. Maybe.
Okay. I'm muted.
There you go.
Yeah, there you are. Guess that's not Los Angeles unless you've got a backdrop.
Yeah. Oh, I do.
Yeah. It worked. Oh, good. Good. Yeah. Backdrop.
That's the way to my house.
Yeah.
Now my mind is gone.
Where?
I like this comment a lot. And, you talked about a couple of things, and one thing that you were saying about the mind, you know, using the mind. I have, with this thing I've been going through, it's my mind says, you know, things happen and things aren't the way I like them to be. And then my mind goes, oh, this is not me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then that brings a certain amount of suffering where when more and more, it's like, well, you know, this is the way it is.
Yeah.
And it's really, once that mind drops off, it's really not that bad.
Yeah.
And we have this measure of going.
Yeah.
Supposed to.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's important. That's the biggest part. You know? Yeah. Not just the stuff that's going on in my head. I mean, I can't fit this world in my head. I can experience it, though. And it doesn't all have to be all about me, you know, and that really helps me when I'm going through difficult situations and circumstances. You know, I just remind myself of that fact. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That whole thing about him going, you know, the general saying, I didn't come for the golden robe.
Yeah.
It's so poignant, really, you know. And
it is. It's beautiful, you know. I mean, that's obviously what he's looking for, is that being at home in himself.
right?
Yeah.
And then somehow that, you know, for me, it always churns up that thing like, oh, what is my real self? And my mind gets all tuned up.
Yeah.
Where, just like you were saying, you know, like there's something basic there that doesn't get churned up.
Yeah.
The mind clouds it over and says, oh, what am I? What is it? What, when it's a, as a parent as, you know, a wet blanket when, you know, when I relax. So, yeah, that's very good, Colin. One last thing I just want to ask you, and now this is kind of, I don't know if facetious is the right word. So that was the last time anybody knew about the robe, robe and bowl, right? That kind of disappeared after that, the Buddha's robe and bowl.
You know, I'm not sure in a, you know, in a relic type of way what happened with that. But you know, basically in a symbolic way, that's passed on to the next successor. So like my Izumi Roshi bought me a robe in Japan. He wore it for at least one sit-in, and then he passed it on to me. And then sometimes a bowl is given to you that, you know, so it's more, obviously it's more symbolic. I really don't know what happened after that. And you could be right with after the sixth ancestor, it disappeared. And we also, you know, have to remember is that the story may or may not be true. But that he had a really good PR guy as one of his successors. And then what happened is that then say most lineages wanted their connection then with the sixth ancestor. And so even with the Soto school is that Seigen Gyoshi, his successor, his successor might have been a creation. The history wasn't clear. And also it's like the sixth ancestor had, you know, maybe about five main successors. And so what are you going to do? Divide the bowl, the robe and bowl into five, you know? So, you know, you can have a piece. No. So, you know, obviously the figurative sense is, you know, now you have the life of the Buddha, you know, the bowl is sometimes called the head of the Buddha, the robes, the clothes of the Buddha, or, you know, so it's like you have those things. And then make sure that you act in accord with those things and appreciate those things that you have and you can teach. And then make sure that it doesn't get extinguished, which is the main part of that transmission. You do your damnedest so that will continue, that somebody who can take that on will do, because it has benefits to people. But don't do it with people that won't take on that responsibility. Otherwise, there's going to be trouble.
Thank you.
It's good seeing you. You're looking a bit better than last week.
I'm shaved.
You shaved? Yeah. Good.
Ken, I believe you had unmuted first, and then Deanne, you're up next.
Hello? Oh,
hello.
Me now?
Hey, Deanne. Yeah, you're
that's
on.
Fine.
So,
yeah.
Oh, okay. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Roshi. Good to see you again.
You too.
So the robe and bowl,
yeah,
apart from some of this being, some of the discussion being about formal transmission, I mean, symbolically, that challenge of trying to pick up the robe and bowl, I mean, I'm thinking of all of us in kind of the fear in knowing your own power.
Yeah.
It kind of shying away from that.
Yeah,
saying,
yeah.
Well, I couldn't pick
yeah,
that up.
Yeah.
I couldn't even try to pick that up.
Yeah. And maybe you don't want to. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, maybe you're not sure where it will lead. Maybe you're not sure you'll be able to do something with that. And maybe it's like, I think you used the word laziness as well. Perhaps it's just
that was for
easier
me.
To pretend like I'm not powerful enough to do that.
Yeah. Yeah, and again is, you know, is the realization implies responsibility, because then, you know, and then with, it's like they also say in Japan, which I think is true, the greater the suffering, the greater the realization. Like if you really are motivated by that suffering that each one of us has, or that angst, you have no choice but to sort that out. And then once that's done, you see that others are in the same place, and you have no choice but to do that. You have to do it. If there's a lot of debate about it, then that's the main thing that's going on. The suffering hasn't gone deep enough yet.
The suffering hasn't gone deep enough yet.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking, it's kind of like what Kierkegaard, you know, the theologian Kierkegaard, his definition of a great sin is knowing what you know, but being unwilling to know it.
Yeah.
That struck me as you're talking about him not being able to pick up the robe and bowl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, we're faced with that. I mean, whenever somebody comes up and wants something of some kind, is that we're faced with that question, you know, is what can I give here? Or I don't want to give and block off, you know. So how can I be a benefit? It's that same thing. And, you know, with the sixth ancestor, he just hands it over, you know.
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's not it. So then what do you want? You know. And then he gives him that, you know.
Yeah.
And then having that, the guy wants more. So then he gives him something else then. And it's just like that, you know, like you're a grandma and you do things just because you want to. You love your kids, you know. He loves people. And he's going to do that anyway because it's, you know, it's like hunting dogs got to hunt. You know, in that way, he's not thinking of that. He doesn't mind being a fool, you know, in that way. It's just, he has to, like a grandma has to. Yeah.
Thank you,
Rishi. Thank you.
Thanks, Deanne.
You said there was someone else.
Ken Erickson.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking, hi, Rishi.
Hi.
Good to see you. Kind of the same, along the same lines of that, picking up the bowl. And there's a number of sidebars because I got to visit Hui Ning's mummified replica in Guangzhou and then see the real one that the Red Guards apparently tried to burn up what they thought was the real one, but the monks had him hidden away. So
yeah,
there's other stories about the bowl and the robe were buried with him, which I'm not sure I understand. But
he was buried in your clothes.
Yeah,
looking through your eyes.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah.
That was the real one. The other one's just fake. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. 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 See, I mean, you can go take a look at Wei Ning, and then what do you see, right? What are your own self in Wei Ning there? The idea is too, for me, is like it reminds me a little bit about when Mizumi Roshi was asking you about this old cedar tree.
Yeah,
and that's like, are you going to pick up the bowl in a way? You know, for me, I've been thinking a lot about that myself. It's like you know, stepping up and having a responsibility and for me, that's kind of a scary word on the one hand. On the other hand, it's like, well, wait a minute. It's just the ability to respond. We've all got that.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah.
So why not do it?
Yeah. It's when we attach a length of time to it that it becomes a problem. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's just right there. It was interesting to me then that story gets elaborated so much in the different stories they tell about Wei Ning, about you can go visit the spot where he had the bowl and the robe hidden, and you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Sounds good. Yeah, so got that going for you. Yeah,
that's right. You can that's become a big touristy temple. But for me, it's like, I think, you know, I was thinking about it. It's like, you know, Zen almost died out a few. The Chan tradition almost died out a few times. You know, but people will only keep it going. And you know, we've had this fire and we're going through all this crap in the United States right now. And if it's not needed now, I mean, my God, it's, people have to be able to pick that up.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's true. Yeah. I mean, there's not, I can't say anything wise about that, is that it's really for each one of us to look at that. I mean, I had the opportunity to get upset because somebody sent me a thing about an alternative story, you know, a narrative. And I didn't respond. I waited till the next day and then just did something. I checked up on this narrative, and this was, you know, et cetera. And yeah. I didn't want to get pulled into it. But you know, when that much, you know, where you go in your original face, that is far more important to bring forward at times like this. You know, because everybody is in that, and there's no short term fixes here. As long as we as human beings want a short term fix, there's going to be problems.
Thanks, Roshi. This is a good one.
Yeah, it's a big question too. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you.
Hugh.
I think that's everybody, and it's 12:40.
Okay.
All right.
Well, thanks again, everyone, for showing up. Yeah. No, I mean, that's it. That's it, you know. It's showing up's the important part of practice. One never knows what may occur. All right. We'll open it up for chat.